It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hi, gang. You know, I always try and kick off the podcast with something people can hopefully relate to that then dovetails or segues to our always amazing guests. So here's one. How many of you took lessons? I don't care if it's music lessons, tennis, horseback riding, church choir, tutoring, whatever. Something you needed your parents to drive you to or to support. Okay, me, I took, are you ready? Guitar, piano, singing, tennis, yes, equestrian. None of which I can do well today, but you know what? Dad paid and Mom drove. The support my guest today gave to his daughters led them to become global sensations. Every single person listening knows them. Hold on. Their father quit his job at Xerox to manage his daughter's career, a move that chopped his income in half and meant that they had to sell their home and didn't really know how it was going to go. Did it pay off? Well, you decide. My guest today is Matthew Knowles, father and manager of his daughters, Beyonce and Solange Knowles. It is great to have you, Matthew. Wait, hold on. I'm not done. Today, Matthew's an artist manager, music executive, college professor, and entrepreneur. But you need to hear what he had to overcome both well before and after achieving incredible success because you know what? It's going to rock your world. Right, Matthew? I mean, I just love your story.
Well, I can't wait to tell it, Liz, and thank you for inviting me.
I want our listeners to know that when we were just chatting before we started, I said, wait, do you live on the West Coast? And you said, well, I live on an airplane, which I thought is hilarious because you travel so much, I'm sure, for your work. But you just came back from, is it Dubai with Beyonce? How was that?
I tell you, it was one of the most amazing experiences. The hotel hasn't opened yet, so 350 guests were invited, guests from all over the world. Get this, Liz. Everything was complimentary. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Dom Perignon, the best of the best of the best. Mm. They had 35 restaurants, over 80 pools. Beyonce's performance was amazing, and she put a lot into making it for the moment. It was a great experience for me.
Well, those are known as, well, for cruises, they call them shakedown cruises, where you offer free cruises to people just so that you work out the kinks of the problems. What hotel is this? And because now I want to go.
It was the Atlantis. And they have a staff of 6,000 people. Wow. That's how large their staff is.
80 pools?
Yes.
Did you hit all 80 of them or just 58?
One.
You know, it's so hard to believe. This is amazing to hear these heights that you've reached. But, you know, it really all started in Texas where you raised Beyonce and Solange. So did you relate when I recounted all the times my mom drove me to lessons?
Yeah, I did. I heard that. I tell you one thing. My former wife and I, we never really forced our kids to do anything. What we did, which hopefully is not unique, but other parents, I'm glad, are listening. We wanted to expose our kids to various things when they were like 5, 6, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. We would take them to science fairs. We'd take them to the skating rink. We would take them to NASA. We would take them all over cultural experiences as well. And we wanted to see what they gravitated to. And both of them, Beyonce and Solange, gravitated to music. And so then we surrounded them, put them in a dance troupe, which I think is discipline. It teaches discipline. And then slowly, actually, the dance teacher said, hey, you know, Beyonce can really sing. And there's a category called dancing. Do you mind if I put her in it? And we were like, yeah, go ahead. And she won and went on to win 35 more competitions. And then we began to think, well, maybe there's a chance here.
Well, you were living in Texas with your kids, but you're not from Texas. You're from Alabama, which is a far cry from walking the red carpet at the Grammy Awards, right? So before we get to, how you made the big decision to end your job at Xerox, which was obviously paying pretty well to manage Beyoncé's career, I want to go back to your childhood, because how people grow up, I feel, gives them, or not, the spine and the stick-to-itiveness to fight through any kind of difficulties. Tell me about your folks in your life in Alabama.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town called Gaston, Alabama, 50 miles north of Birmingham. I had role models. My grandfather on my mother's side, Dave Hogue, in Marion, Alabama. Dave Hogue owned 300 acres of land, and I used to look up to my grandfather, about 6'6", just firm, but very kind, but a businessman. He had two businesses. One, he was a farmer, but he convinced a paper mill in Marion to lease a third of his land, pay him, because they needed to tear down, cut the trees and make paper.
Okay.
He would go behind them and then farm. Genius. They paid him to cut down the trees and the bush
that so he needed cut down.
The second thing is the first time I ever heard a white man call a black man mister. And I have this in one of my books. My grandfather was a regional moonshine distributor. And I was as a kid one summer there, and knock on the door on a Saturday morning is Mr. Hogue here. And I had one of my cousins, and we couldn't believe it. They called our grandfather Mister, and that was a big deal for us. So I had my grandfather, and then my parents. My mother, she was a colored maid, made $3 a day, but she convinced the woman she worked for to give her all the hand-me-downs, and my mother with her two girlfriends on the weekend would make these beautiful quilts that we hear about in the South. My dad was a truck driver, and he convinced the owner of the trucking company to let him keep that truck 24/7. And he would tear down old houses, sell the wood, the metals. He would buy old cars, sell all of the parts. So I learned entrepreneurship from my parents and my grandparents.
This is amazing, Matthew, on many levels. But that's what I'm hearing, this genetic streak of entrepreneurial spirit that must have given you such guts and such hope and such, I guess, a pathway. And it's really important for kids to see what can be achieved. And it feels like that was laid out right in front of you. But I do want to go back to what you just said about the first white person to call your grandfather Mister. And that touches me deeply. I want our listeners to understand you grew up in a very segregated Alabama, and yet you attended an all-white elementary school, right? I mean, during a very dark time in American history. What was that experience like for you?
We're talking 1952 is when I was born in Gaston. So we're talking the era of George Wallace, stark segregationist. I never went to a black school. Less than only elementary, but I never went to a black school until my junior year of college. So that meant I desegregated Litchfield Junior High, Gaston High School, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, and then finally my junior year went to Fisk University, which is a historically black college university, HBCU, in Nashville. So I have a lot of battle scars. I've been beaten. I've been spit on. I've been electric prodded. A lot of trauma, literally, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, 10 years of therapy that I went through. Took a while before we realized, my therapist, and I had to actually change therapists, that my issue was racial trauma.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we're going to be right back.
from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Racial trauma. It, well, makes absolute sense. Absolute sense to me. And when you say you had to change your therapist, was that because you weren't getting to the bottom of your problem with the original one?
Yes. A wonderful, wonderful person, Jewish New Yorker. But she didn't understand from a Black man perspective. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I had to get a Black man that was a therapist who could understand my perspective of where I was coming from. And once I made the change, things began to open up and I began to understand that as a child, as he used to say, if it wasn't for the environment that I grew up in, I wouldn't be as successful. And had it not been for the environment that I grew up in, I would not make all of the failures and mistakes. So it was an oxymoron,
right.
Because being in that classroom, I never forget my first day at Litchfield Junior High, and I'm walking into my English class, because we never changed classes in elementary school. And by the way, can you believe that I went to a Catholic elementary school? So we have to add that to the list.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm walking into my English class, and I'm sitting down in the second row, and the English teacher asked me to read in the book, an English book. We were reading Shakespeare, a paragraph, and I butchered it. I butchered it. And all the white kids, I'm the only Black kid in the class, just started laughing and throwing spitballs. And it was an experience that I'll never forget.
Yeah, a lot of kids, white, Black, whatever, would butcher Shakespeare today. And that just enrages me. But look what you then accomplished. So out of college, I would imagine you had a couple of jobs. What brought you to Xerox, big corporation?
Well, I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and literally just came to Houston because one of the universities was playing Texas Southern University, where I ended up actually years later teaching for 9 years. Hmm. And I just love the energy of the city. And this is, I always tell this story. Me and about 10 other Black guys, we were just going to happy hour. I had taken my first job with Pitney Bowes, really didn't like it. And here I am, we're just guys hanging out on a Friday. And this young guy comes up to me and he says, I've been listening to you guys. How would you like to, and he was speaking to me, how would you like to work at Xerox? Your leadership is what we're looking for.
Wow.
I thought the guy was joking. I would say, get out of here. <You know? laughs> No, I want you to meet me at 8 o'clock on Monday. And he gave me his card, and sure enough, that's how I got my job at Xerox. Literally, you never know who's listening. That's the moral of that story.
Wow.
You never know who's listening.
And how far did you rise? Like, what part of Xerox were you working with and for?
Well, it's very interesting because I only sold copiers, which is what we know that Xerox for back then, for a year. I was in the engineering division in sales, but then I got a quantum leap to the medical division of Xerox, selling zero radiography, which in the 80s was the leading modality for breast cancer detection, which fast forward later on saved my own life.
Well, we'll get to that, because therein lies the mountain that sprouts up, this volcano in front of you. So here's real dedication. Your then wife, Tina, was running a hair salon. By then, you had reached unbelievable heights in corporate America, number one sales representative worldwide at Xerox. And then you went to work for some other companies, including Philips, where you were also completely very stellar when it came to the ranks. But you made the decision to quit. What was that like? Take us back to that leap of faith that you had to take, leaving corporate America to do something that was unknown, because it was not easy, I would imagine.
It was a defining moment for me. There was a surgical case I was doing in the morning, and after the case, I got paged overall in the hospital, and I'm thinking, wow, I must have either said something terribly bad, or maybe we lost the patient and there's a protocol for that. And so the neurosurgeon asked me to come to his office, and I'm so nervous. I don't know what I did wrong, and I'm trying to rethink every movement. And then he tells me, and he shows me this letter that said that if he didn't reduce his cost per procedure, he would lose his ability to practice at that hospital, the first generation of managed care in the medical field. And when he told me that, he told me, I'm sorry, Mr. Knowles, but I can't use your instruments anymore. And I then called Tina and I said, Tina, I just can't. I actually said, I can't do this shit anymore. But I just said, I just can't do this. That's when I just began to make a transition. And I share when I do a lot of public speaking, I didn't quit that day. I just did a transition to get out of corporate America,
Fair
which
enough.
Included me to go back to school, to take music business courses, to go as many seminars as I could around America to transition into the music industry.
Parenthood, though, Matthew, is hard enough. But what's the dynamic like when the dad becomes the manager of the kid?
You know, I have to tell you, it was extremely difficult. And for several reasons. One is I manage a group. That's even more difficult than it was just managing my daughters as a solo artist. Because then I have other people that's part of what they're doing.
Yes.
Then I have a fiduciary duty as a manager to be fair and equitable with all of them, which means sometimes I had to make tough decisions that was and were not best for Beyonce.
Mm. Like what? Do you remember?
Well,
any?
Like who's going to lead the song or what they're going to wear or her opinion, but the other girl's opinion was different. Regardless if she had the better opinion or not, she's in a group. So if three people says this is what we think is the right thing, then that's what wins out, not the one person. It's really difficult, and it was really difficult because I spent a lot of time being a manager rather than being a daddy.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of going for here, because that's a tough fence to scale, I would think. But you obviously did very, very well, because both the group and then when she started her solo career, absolutely brilliant. And the success that she's achieved is stunning. I would then sort of fast forward it to 2019. You're on top of the world. You're a luminary in the music management world. You're giving motivational speeches. You're teaching. And then you noticed a recurring, was it a blood spot on your shirt that led you to see a doctor?
Yes, just imagine a sheet of paper and a red pen, you put six dots on it.
Okay.
And that's what was on my t-shirt one day. And I looked at it. I didn't think anything about it the first day. I literally thought my wife had gotten some new t-shirts or something. And the second day, got my attention. And then I asked my wife, these new dots, I don't understand. And she was like, that's interesting, because when I cleaned the sheets the last two mornings, there were dots on your side of the bed, red dots. I had a one-day course when I was in the medical division of Xerox, and it was about male breast cancer. And I remember just vividly that nipple discharge was one of those symptoms for male breast cancer. So I called my doctor. I told him what was going on. I asked him, I said, you know, I think I need to get a mammogram. And he was like, gosh, in all my years of practice, I've never had a male patient that I referred to get a mammogram. And then I had to be firm, like, I'm telling you, I need to get a mammogram. And so I got a mammogram on a Monday, got a biopsy on a Wednesday, and had surgery on a Friday.
So it was cancer.
It was cancer. But it even went a step further. After my surgery, and I wish this would have happened before my surgery, but after my surgery, we did a saliva test for a genetic testing. And it turns out that I have a genetic malfunction.
The BRCA gene.
And so that just means I have a higher risk, not that I have it, but I have a higher risk of prostate, pancreatic, melanoma. As men, we have a higher rate when we have that BRCA gene. So I have to be ever aware and make lifestyle changes. But I annually get my MRIs, my blood tests, my mammogram. And I'm fortunate that I found my cancer stage 1A, which is all about the stages, which, as you know, determines the type of lifestyle that we have and the type of medical care that we will need.
This is a way bigger issue for men than men know or even think about, is it not? I mean, the numbers are pretty significant when it comes to male breast cancer. You've gone out there and talked about it.
I make that one of my platforms, health and wellness. It's much bigger than we think because men are embarrassed and ashamed to say that they have breast cancer. So we have to change the narrative. We have to change the messaging. And I'm so happy and proud how the medical community has accepted this. I say male chest cancer. And let me tell you why. If I was jogging in Central Park with my shirt off, nobody would care. If you were jogging in Central Park with your shirt off, you would go to jail.
Yeah.
So for someone to say there's no difference, that's not true.
Well, there's quite a big group of people who say we should be able to just do the exact same thing as men. I mean, it's all just skin. It's just our human body. But, I totally see your point that when you message it by saying chest cancer, perhaps it's a little easier for people to wrap their minds around and certainly go get it checked.
Well, it's certainly much easier for men to wrap their head around because I've had so many whispers in my ear. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for saying it that way. Huh. I have it, too.
Well, it runs in your family, right? Your mother, your aunt, your great aunt, you all had cancer. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So,
and on my father's side, my grandfather and four of his sons had prostate cancer.
Oh, we've just spoken last week to Taylor Dane, who had colon cancer, the singer. She's just amazing from the 80s. And she had 10 feet of her colon removed. As you look forward, you love teaching. I mean, this runs in your blood. You became a teacher, as you said, at Texas Southern. You've held positions at Pepperdine, London College of Creative Media, Point Blank Music School, and all these other organizations. Now that you're out there teaching health and wellness, what is your number one message?
I really talk to a certain segment, which is the Black African-American community. Black men, we lead in mortality rate in every category except breast cancer and suicide. The same for Black women. They lead in the mortality rate for breast cancer. So I'm out there talking about early detection, but I'm also talking about mental health, as we are now beginning to find in the medical community that unresolved trauma can cause cancer. And so I'm out there talking about
health. Wait. So I'm a believer that stress releases toxins. It's almost along those lines is what I'm hearing you say.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so I'm sharing that message, pulling back from the classroom and doing more of just public speaking, motivational speaking, talking about the DNA of achievers, health and wellness, entrepreneurship, marketing, sales, those types of topics.
DNA of achievers. I like how you put that. I was taking a Peloton this morning, and the teacher, Robin Azron, I believe her name is, amazing. And she said, turn your doubt into determination. Isn't that one of the number one characteristics of entrepreneurs and, I guess, optimists and winners out there? We all have doubts, right? But you turn it into determination.
We absolutely do. But more importantly, the number one trait of success is having and have found your passion and understanding that when you live your passion, you never work a day in your life. And most people haven't really found their passion. What is it that energizes them, that fuels them? We often listen to other people and we're sometimes even embarrassed and ashamed to say, this is what I love, because some people will look at it and maybe laugh at it or discourage you and say, you'll never do that. Or it's not the cool thing to be. So I'm all about finding your passion in life, because what coexists with that, like a glove, is work ethics. And so that's why you see these highly successful people, highly successful athletes, music, they practice, because they love so much what they do.
Have you seen that within Beyoncé? I know she has it, because I have heard that her sound checks are as energetic as once she's in front of the actual audience. Can you kind of encapsulate what she does?
Well, that was part of the Destiny's Child boot camp that I used to give the girls. And that simply is, you practice how you play. And so in sound check, practice how you play is you sound check as if you're performing in front of 10,000 people. Most artists go haphazardly about it. But again, my philosophy always with teaching my artists is you practice how you play.
I hear that Bruce Springsteen does that. He gives it 1,000%, even though you're sapping energy in some way, shape, or form for the evening production. And I think that that's fascinating. You got to give it 1,000%. I like that. Practice how you play. That's amazing. What's more amazing is your story. Matthew, I'm so appreciative that you've shared it with us. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much. I enjoyed this, and I look forward, hopefully, to having another opportunity to talk with you.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we drop it, when it goes, is it next week, Zach?
Yes.
Okay, my producer says next week. We'll get you the link, and you get it out far and wide to whoever you think can really benefit from this message.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to share my message.
Well, I think actually everyone can benefit. So I feel I'm going to float out of this audio room when I leave today, because I've learned so much from you. Thank you very much.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. You. Matthew Bye. Knowles. So you guys, honestly, I hope you were, if you're driving, don't be writing down things. But I mean, go home and write down some of these things that Matthew just shared so generously with us. Practice how you play. DNA of achievers. Oh my goodness. I got to go write things down. In the meantime, thank you so, so much as always for listening. And we've got great ones every single week. You know that. So we'll see you on Fox Business Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Klayman Countdown. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.